I know you're flawless. I know you wouldn't hurt a beetle, but you're so buff and so strong. I'm nervous, Forrest Gump.
Hello, and welcome back to the next installment of the Great Animorphs Reread, number 40, The Other, which features Marco turning into a bee. And as Diana referred to in our last podcast, was the gay Andalite book. That is how we summed it up.
This was born out, yes, during your reading.
Yes.
You can agree this is
yes.
The gay Andalite book.
Yes, I think we can all agree this is the gay Andalite book. All in all, it was a very touching book.
It is. Most of the things that I had remembered about it were plotty, I guess. Like, oh, they find more Andalites, and then there's drama involving Mr. Three because they don't know who they can trust. And I had forgotten somehow all of the, heart-wrenching stuff, which is most of it.
Yeah, it's very... I felt a little bit like if I were to write an episode, a book, an installment of Animorphs, like, this felt like one that perhaps I would have wanted to, tackle, or that would have been, in my interest, in that it was really very, character-y, and that even though the plot intrigue was really good, I thought, it was enough to sustain it, and so it wasn't quite, one of those, one-off character pieces where, Cassie's having a conversation for the whole book inside someone else's head, kind of thing. but then not nearly as plotty as, I forget, a couple of the ones we've read recently have been really just, very plot and, not really any grounded.
It was a good balance of, because you don't know through most of it whether you can trust Defenolin.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know whether he's trying to bait them into a trap and sell them out to the Yerks, or, what his game plan is. And so the intrigue is good, and it keeps going, and it keeps unfolding at a reasonable pace, considering that it's a slim book. But at the same time, it is, firmly an Animorphs book. It doesn't have that problem that the Journey to Atlantis book had. It doesn't introduce anything, super wild.
Yeah.
There's no new alien species. There's nothing like that. It's just characters that we know. And then characters who are unfamiliar but are Andalites, and so there's not as much groundwork that has to be done, and
mm-hmm.
so there's enough time for it to develop Marco, and then to develop the two new Andalites and Axe, I think, mainly.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point, that it's working with things that we already know about and just adding more, giving us more information to sort of flesh out what we know about the Andalites, what we know about Axe, what we know about the Animorphs, and Marco in particular. And the intrigue, I think intrigue is a really good word for it, because, I mean, a lot of the, for example, the taxidermy book, Journey to Atlantis book, which we always really, maybe a little unfairly, go back to, but it does stand out.
The bronze standard.
Yeah. But the idea that the intrigue in that one is just what are they doing? What is this? And I feel like a lot of the mysteries of Animorphs in a lot of these one-off books are here's this crazy thing, or what's this crazy plan? And in this one, it was just here's this character that's being presented to us, and we don't understand him. And we're getting information about him that is forcing us to reconcile, what we know about Andalites, or what Axe knows about Andalites, or how we feel about Axe.
Yeah, because it draws on the characters mentioned when Marco is channel surfing and sees unsolved mysteries, and that there's this video clip of an Andalite, and it's very obviously an Andalite. And the first thing he says to Axe when he tells him is no, it's not Estrid, it's not Arbot. And so it calls back to the previous books and stuff that's happened as, things that, oh, yeah, it makes sense to think that we would see them again, but no,
mm-hmm.
It's somebody new. And
yeah.
Once they start interacting with them, Marco is presented with, I feel like every time we get new Andalites, we get new types of Andalites, which
yes.
is good.
Yes, I was just thinking that.
Because these two don't act like all the traitors and
mm-mm.
fuck-ups did.
Mm-mm.
And, And they don't act like Axe does, and they don't act like Elfanger did, and they certainly don't act like what they assume Alarend is like, or
mm-hmm.
was like.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it definitely keeps fleshing out the species that is good and is nominally an ally, but hasn't yet done anything for Earth.
Yeah, what's up with that?
And a lot of attention is paid to the Yurts and making them, you know, villains that you can believe in
mm-hmm.
and that feel real instead of just being like a stock villain,
sure.
which is also good. But I think that having lots of examples of different types of Andalites,
yeah,
is interesting and juicy and in this case, really sad.
Yeah.
Every time we get a glimpse of like the Andalite homeworld culture, I'm like, I'm not sold on this.
Yeah. Well, that's also like I think part of the importance of having more Andalites is the idea that the one Andalite that we normally get the perspective of is Axe, who's young and naive and hasn't started his Tumblr yet, as it were, in terms of like being more aware of like
he's not woke.
He's not woke at all. And so we get sort of like just a whole world of Andalites filtered through Axe's very sort of limited perspective, which was really, really apparent just by contrast in this book, because now we're starting to meet older Andalites. And I think by virtue of the fact that technically the very first Andalite we meet is Elfangor, who is an older Andalite who's seen some shit and had to make some tough decisions, and maybe they weren't the right decisions. Maybe like we start out in like gray area Andalite. And so I think like that, you know, Axe coming along and that's just works to serve like his journey as well as like giving him something to like grow up into. But like definitely Gafilin and Myrtle.
I mean,
I guess to say that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could say that there's like an emphasis on the second syllable.
Myrtle.
But that's not
okay,
that's not
can.
Apparent.
We
there's no accent.
Myrtle.
We're gonna call him Myrtle.
Myrtle.
Myrty for short. There's a horse named My Myrty. That was
okay.
What I thought of the whole time. Like, it's got four legs. It's almost the same.
Yeah, just squint. But yeah, these two Andalites are older and have seen some shit and lived through some shit, and that makes for interesting characters, regardless if they're aliens or not.
They're also totally divorced from, like, the conflict, even though they're both fighter pilots. So, they're fighter pilots, they're in a conflict, they crash on Earth, that's why they're there. But Gafinilin's old, like, his sole purpose is, like, keeping Myrtle alive, keeping him safe, keeping him away from Isardry. Keeping them hidden in suburbia, which we will get to.
We have so much to get to on that front.
And when the Animorphs start talking to him, he's like, I don't care about any of this. Like, I'm not going to join your fight. I want to talk to your prince for reasons, capital R reasons. But they don't involve a fight against the Yurks. They don't involve anything to do with saving the Earth.
Yeah.
Or even getting back to the Andalite homeworld.
Yeah, he has no stake in it.
His stakes are completely his own.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very personal.
Well, and that throws the Animorphs a bit. And I think that is really cool about the way that the character sort of facilitates the plot intrigue, is that, like, because his stakes are completely his own, with someone like Marco narrating, he picks up on that and then immediately recognizes that he's not going to act out of any interest other than his own, which could mean that he's going to throw the Andalite or the Animorphs under the bus. Or it could mean that he, you know, maybe in the first place they thought he was bad and they wanted to turn the Animorphs over to Visser III because they thought that Visser III wanted a healthy Andalite body. And so he would like get up, give like one of the Andalite bandits to Visser III.
Yeah, Marco is probably the perfect narrator for this book.
I really like that choice a lot.
Every time I read one of the books, I think, okay, so like, could this, if this story had another narrator, like, how would it go? And I mean, Axe is probably the obvious one for an Andalite book, but he had the last Andalite book, and Marco is good for this one because of who Marco is. And he spends a lot of time talking about that and like comparing himself kind of to Gafilin, and like he understands him. And that's why he's immediately suspicious and, like, cynical, because he's thinking of this guy in terms of, like, what he would do or what he has done, like, involving his mother, this one.
Yeah.
So, I love a Marco book.
Yeah, it was really...
You get humor and 90s references, and also you get really cutting, like, borderline self-loathing, like, insight.
Yeah, well, I really liked how the situation wasn't as overtly one that required, like, Marco's ruthlessness to, like, A to B, knowing what needs to be done kind of thing. I liked that, like, it was a little more low-key than that, but his strengths still served it. And then there were more sort of nuanced ways that that was brought into it. And ways that he could, that were more, like, taking his ruthlessness and manifesting it in sort of, like, compassion. Because he demonstrates, like, a lot of compassion in the book and sort of showing the way that those two, like, work together. Which is really interesting because you don't see that from Marco very often. And I think that it's easy to write him off a little bit in his, like, role of, like, you know, the A to B guy in the group. But that there is, that serves a function, serves a purpose and does serve, like, compassion and empathy in him. Or that those work together in a way.
Yeah. I felt like he related to Gefinelin, when he's thinking about Visor One and, like, the idea that, like, he would probably make some more choices if he didn't have something, like, hugely at stake, or if he didn't feel like that the thing that he was trying to protect was returning that.
Mm-hmm.
Because Gefinelin and Myrtle are both, like, they don't have anything to go back to. They have no reason to try to go home. They really only have each other.
Mm.
Whereas, yeah, I mean, Marco certainly would prefer, you know, to be able to save his mom and for that to be his personal stake and that for that to be the only thing that he has to do.
Mm.
But as of right now, you know, the Earth is still worth saving.
Yeah.
And he wants his city to not be destroyed and his friends to not be enslaved. And he has a lot of other things going on.
Yeah.
And so I was glad to see, like, that he, while being suspicious, because that's who he is, was still the most obviously and, like, picking at the way that the two Andalites presented themselves and the way that Axe reacted to them.
Mm.
Like, he's really the only character who's like, huh, you all are being shitheads.
Yeah.
Really, none of the other guys do.
Rachel, a little bit in the very end. Because, like, by the end of the book, I was like, Marco and Rachel are, like, the champs in this book. And
yeah.
I love that they got, like, page time together.
Yeah. I always like it when they can team up.
Yeah. Well, because they both, like, are so shrewd. And, like, because Marco, Tobias, and Axe first go to, like, do a little, like, recon at Henry McClellan's house or whatever. Which is what Gefinelin is posing as a human. And so they do a little recon, and then they get discovered, and then they're like, okay, like, we'll let our prince meet with you. And then Marco was like, oh, hell no, I'm not letting, like, Jake go in without a little more recon.
Yeah.
And so, like, but he tells everybody, like, yeah, we'll, like, go and meet there. And then Rachel stays behind and is like, yeah, I don't buy that for a second. I know you're going back to, like, check it out again, and I'm going with you. And I was just like, bros.
Yeah.
Like, best buds.
They are bros.
Yeah.
Battle bros.
Yeah. And the idea that, like, in the end, like, Rachel's the one that says something about, like, there are a lot of able-bodied people who are pieces of shit who, like, aren't worth their time.
Yes.
Or, like, wastes of oxygen, she says. And I was like, my girl. But Marco is really the only one throughout the book that, like...
And it's like, immediate. And
yeah, checks
guess,
Axe and puts him in his place and is and, like, calls him out on being kind of a dick. Not kind of, being a dick.
Yeah, he's displaying some parts of Andalite and human culture that coincide and they're
mm-hmm.
not ideal.
Yeah.
Or generous.
Yeah.
Or humane.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's funny. Axe is relatable for like 5 seconds of this book.
Yeah.
At the very beginning when he's watching TV.
When he invented DVR.
Yes. He invents DVR and I'm like, oh yeah, dude. Thank you. Like you are the alien that I understand because I also love television.
Yeah.
And then he like descends into being a kind of ableist jerk.
He's like, he's a real fart in this book, like, the whole time. And, like,
just...
In the end, he, like, relents a little, but you're like, come on, man.
And it's couched... I guess... I don't know. I guess you could say that this sort of descends into, like, after-school special territory.
It does... yeah. I can see that.
But, Like, I'm willing to set that aside because this is a series that, I mean, that goes in for, like, commentary.
Yes.
Even if it goes over kids' heads, because obviously this went over my head.
Yes.
When I was a kid. Like, I might have gotten, like, the disability stuff, but I did not get everything else that's going on.
No.
Because there's a lot.
Yes.
And, yeah, so, I mean, every now and then it feels a little bit, like, didactic, I guess.
There's that conversation in the end where Rachel does pipe up. They, like,
but,
insert
I mean,
that.
Literally nothing has changed attitudinally in our culture to
yeah.
this day.
Yeah.
So...
Well,
yeah.
that's the thing. Like, I
might
look
as
at
well
this.
Address it.
Well, I look at this. This is, like, what, late 90s? Like, maybe early 2000s at this point? 2000. This is 18 years ago. This is 2000. And, like, a kid's young adult sci-fi series. And, like, I mean, we talk a lot about sci-fi being able to embody, like, social messages. And, like, Animorphs does it well. And, like, the fact that it does do it, I think, is worth... Like, okay, yes, it might be a little didactic, but, like, I still think that it should be commended for doing it. Because, also, most of the time, it's not related to focusing on disability and, like, ableism and young adult series. And then also, like, the AIDS crisis. And, like, that's not, like, kudos for doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it strays into that thing that a lot of properties do, like X-Men and things like that, where it's like, oh, so, like, this thing that exists in universe, like, is a metaphor
sure.
for, like, a real-world thing, like
sure.
racism or what have you. But...
Yeah, that can be.
Like, I feel like, in this case, it's close enough to reality that, I mean, it's obvious... To an adult reader, it's very obvious what's happening. It's literally called The Other.
Yeah.
That's hard to get past.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know later on in the series there will be... This will happen again, and I think it does involve human characters, and so we can see how it deals with that then.
Yeah.
But for right now, I mean, you have two aliens, sentient alien characters, who are the humans of their world, who are, like... Triply marginalized, I guess? Let's see. Gofenolin has a disease that is killing him rapidly.
Mm.
Sula's disease. And since it's genetic, you can't morph to get rid of it. And then Myrtle has, an allergy to the morphing power and, like, can't morph either. And also he was injured in their crash on Earth. And so he's lost part of his tail. Which I guess on the Andalite homeworld is, like, a big source of shame and, like, cultural ostracism. They even have a word for it. It's fantastic. And this is all of Axe's, like, ball of wax. Like, this is where all of his issues come out because he's really put off by both of them. And he doesn't understand them. He doesn't understand what's happening or, like, why Gofenolin would act this way. Even when Gofenolin, like, literally just tells them, like, this is what the haps is. Like, I'm not going to sell you out to Mr. Three. That's not, I didn't think that you had, like, you know, this perfect, wonderful Andalite prince who I can sell to Mr. Three or acquire or whatever it is. I literally just want to take care of my boyfriend and die in peace.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fucking sad.
It's like, there's like a little love story in this book. It's beautiful.
It is. And I mean, I guess they couldn't be like super obvious about it. And they have Tobias use the word shorm, which implies that they're just BFF. But
like they can hear each other in thought speak, even with like
speak.
Yeah, like without actually like directing it. Like come
they're,
on, now.
When they crash, their fighter jets' wings like lock together and they spiral down to Earth. This is extremely romantic.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah, in every sense.
Yeah.
It's tragedy.
And like they're
it's
trying to like Myrtle's been captured. And they're holding him, like, hostage to
yeah.
get Gofenolin to come, like, get him. And so, like, it's also, like, a rescue mission.
Yeah,
like,
Myrtle's a damsel.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's very swoony. Like, the whole thing is just, like, oh,
Gofenolin, like, the depth of his attachment is
mm-hmm.
such that he doesn't care about anything else.
Yeah.
And at first, like, everyone is just baffled by this. And they're
mm-hmm.
like, wait, your end game is literally just you and your boy living in this really nice house in suburbia.
And like, gardening.
That's it? Mm-hmm. And gardening, yes.
Yeah.
It is a really nice house.
Yeah.
I like that Marco, like, knows all the names of the appliances, and he's like, maybe I'm watching too much Cooking Network, or whatever it is. Food Network. Like, yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
What cuisine art?
Oh, Marco. Buddy. Where are we going with any of that? Are we going places with it?
I mean, I definitely think there's... You can argue that those types of issues should have been brought up with human characters.
That's a good point.
But... As I recall, that a similar plot line does happen later on in the series with humans, and I don't remember how it was handled because as we have talked about, my memories of the end of the series are kind of blurry.
Same.
I didn't reread them endlessly for whatever reason. But overall, I think that it's pretty effective, and it's definitely very moving.
It is very moving. The end was getting me, because in the end, like, they save Myrtle, and then everything sort of returns to normal, and then they just leave Kefinnelyn and Myrtle to the rest of Kefinnelyn's days, basically. And then Marco brings up the question of, like, when Kefinnelyn dies,
yeah, like, what are you gonna do?
What is Myrtle gonna do?
And he goes to see him.
He goes to see him.
And is like, hey, you know, when the thing happens, like... You can hang out with us.
Yeah, and specifically says, like, lonely is, like, not a good way to live. And then, like, Myrtle's reaction is, like, really, it was, like, the most, just that he gets very, like, he pauses, and Marco thinks, like, oh, like, I fucked it up.
Yeah, like, I offended him.
Because he talks about, like, he is very self-aware in this book, and he talks about how, like, people might not like him because he does see... the, like, essence of things at all times and doesn't necessarily, like...
Yeah, like, deal in bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that... And so he was worried that, like, he maybe offended him, but then Myrtle basically, like, I think, like, had to take a second to, like, compose himself and to say thank you. And he called Marco an Aris. And I was like...
Yeah, I thought that was really cute.
It was cute. It was... Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot to take. Because that's also the only time we ever really get to see Myrtle, which I think is kind of a shame.
Yeah, he's off the page for pretty much the entire book, and so he gets talked about a lot. When Marco
being a damsel.
Initially goes, like, to the Henry McClellan house as a bee, he realizes that, like, he doesn't... The only Andalite scent is Kefinnelyn. Like, Myrtle hasn't been there for a long time, and so that, like, adds another wrench in, like, where is he?
Yeah.
Like, what is actually going on here? Like, what is this guy's end game? Like, what does he want?
Mm-hmm.
If his friend is not demonstrably in the house. And, yeah, he doesn't show up until the very end, and he says something really philosophical when Marco's like, hey, are you okay? Like, because you're, like, inside a cage, and, like, the truck's rolling, and he says, I am as I was, and Marco's like, another fucking philosopher. Andalites.
Oh.
So that was fun. But yeah, I mean, that's really all you, and then you see him briefly after the battle's done, and acts as a dick to him, and gets a lecture from Cassie, maybe?
Tobias, also.
And Tobias, yeah.
Because Tobias is like... I'm a freak.
Can we not do this?
Yeah, like...
You're talking to a freak.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, at the end, when Marco goes to see him. So I would love... Yeah, I would have liked more martial action, but Kefinnelyn is interesting and, like, kind of fun.
Yeah.
His attitude is immediately unusual.
Yeah. No, he's really, like, he's really, really interesting to parse. And even, like, they even give him a little bit... Like, even though they... And... You know, maybe Myrtle notwithstanding, because we didn't get enough time with him. But even though these are sort of one-off characters that are a little bit didactic just in their existence in the book, I thought they did a good job sort of, like, fleshing Kefinnelyn out and making him sort of just, like, interesting and unique. And, like, because he's shredded. He's, like, enormous.
Yeah, he's this giant, like, super butch animal.
Pretty much. Basically.
He's in incredible shape, and the first thing Marco thinks is, like, oh, Axe cannot take this guy. Like, if they're gonna fight, like, Axe is gonna lose.
Yeah.
Axe is fine, but he's, like, a kid. He's our age, and you know, a bunch of 12-year-olds are not ripped to hell.
No.
And seasoned, as it turns out, fighter pilots.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's like this like Andalite icon. He probably looks like what they carve on their temples.
Yeah. Well, and they give him like
and he has a little bit of that, like, you know, standing on honor thing that all the Andalites do.
Sure.
Like, he's super offended that anybody thinks that he would take the coward's way out of trying to, like, cure himself, which is its own conversation.
Yeah.
And, but then, yeah, he likes to garden.
Yeah.
And,
well, there's the part where he has kind of a sense of humor, where, like, he like, saves Marco. He, like, he, so, like, a Horpager's coming from behind, and Marco doesn't see him, and Gefinelin, like, kills him for him, or knocks him out, or whatever. And Marco's like, oh, like, thanks for that. And Gefinelin's just like, you should probably look behind you more. And there's, like, a when Marco says, like, there's, like, a weird twinkle in his eye. Like, it's almost like Andalite humor. And I'm like...
Yeah, because they don't really crack jokes.
Yeah, but I just,
it's always
remarked, like,
upon when Axe makes a joke.
Exactly.
And then Myrtle is more on, like, the... on the, like, Axe philosophy side.
Yeah.
Like, as far as his personality goes. But is also, like, really jacked.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, these dudes were, like, in their prime. They were in the military. They did their jobs for a reasonable number of years and were very good at them.
Yeah.
Like, they've got, like, great kill stats or whatever the military counts by. And Axe has heard of them.
Yeah.
Or he's at least heard of... Oh, yeah, he's heard of both of them.
Yeah.
Because of being in the academy and them being, like, icons. Then you realize that... I mean, if they were to go home, they wouldn't be welcomed. They wouldn't, like, get a hero's welcome, despite being wounded in combat. I don't know if it's indicated how Gefinelin would have been cared for if they were at home. It's really only talked about in terms of, like, when X says, oh, and, you know, some people, like he could acquire a healthy adult Andalite and, you know, thereby escape this disease, like, turn himself into a Nephilite and not have Sula's disease anymore. And that's looked down upon, and Axe thinks it's, like, it's supposed to be, like, yeah, the coward's way out, or whatever it is.
Mm.
But other than that, it's not really suggested that, like, there is a great hospice system in place on the Andalite homeworld.
Yeah, it makes you wonder.
For people who, like, have 3 months to live. And apparently, if Myrtle went home, he would be an outcast.
Yeah. Well, that was, like, when you were mentioning Axe and humor, that was one of the things that made Axe a dick in this book also, is that Marco says something very seriously about Myrtle or something about, like, why is it a big deal or something that...
Yeah,
and
Axe thinks it's kidding.
Axe thinks it's a joke. And I'm
like no,
man.
You really are bad at humor.
Yeah, like, Axe... Yeah, Axe is disappointing a little bit in this book. And, like, it served a purpose, and I think that it was...
I mean, it's definitely a mirror... for
exactly.
ability issues in our culture.
Yeah.
None of this is, like, inaccurate, unfortunately,
yeah.
or even out of... It's not, like, overblown at all. You hear people say things like this.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
I remember when the second X-Men film came out, which I... maybe... Yeah, I guess it had to have been the second one. So I think that was the one that had a cure plot line. And, like, part of it involved, like, Rogue wanting a cure for the X gene that she has, and the rest of the X-Men were like, what are you doing? Like, you're betraying the cause or whatever it is. And I also don't recall that was handled particularly well.
Probably not.
And a lot of the real-world conversation about these issues centers on cures, and it's, you know, there's pushback to that, and, you know, from people... in the know, rightfully. But I think this book kind of does it. It does a pretty good job of straddling that, being like, this is not an illegitimate choice. Neither of these choices is illegitimate,
mm-hmm.
or should be. Like, that wouldn't be cowardly if Gefinelin wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, the other side of it is also, you know, there's not, like, a wrong choice.
Well, I think that's another reason why Marco is a really good narrator for this book, is because Marco is not going to get holier than thou about anybody's decisions.
No.
Yeah, Marco, I think, of anybody, Maybe Rachel and Tobias.
Yeah, Tobias is... You can always count on him to be philosophical.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to understand where the non-normative perspective is coming from.
Yeah, for sure.
The bee is a new morph. That's
the
new morph for the
book.
It doesn't... This is not really a book about morphing.
No.
Other than questions of, like, who can morph and why they would.
Yeah.
But, like, the bee itself... I mean, he has a little bit of a problem with the bee because it's a hive species, but
yeah.
Other than that, he kind of gets over it and then he gets
And Rachel eats that. Yeah, Rachel eats that thing that comes after him. I did it again. Rachel and Marco broing out in this book where Rachel saves him from
yeah.
that weird thing. And then she also saves him because he's about to get hit by the car as the gorilla and she throws a train in its way. And then she gets stuck in between, like, in an aisle as an elephant and he, like, helps her back out.
Yeah.
Delightful.
There's a lot of good Rachel and Marco team up.
I'm sad that Myrtle never comes back.
Yeah, I don't think he does.
Yeah.
Or if he does, I don't know what the context is.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, you know that Gifenlon's going to die, like, relatively quickly.
Yeah.
And Myrtle can't morph, so, like, he can't...
What's he going to do? Yeah, that's, like, the thing that I really... Yeah, that's the thing that
like,
I really
can we please care for him?
Want to know.
Yeah, most of the dialogue, which involves... The Animorphs talking about why Axe is being a dick is pretty realistic, I would say.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to, like, drag him into not being an asshole. And they have to do it by being like, well, these guys are your heroes. Like, can you please just, like, think about their heroic deeds, which is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But which happens.
Yeah.
The idea that people with disabilities have to be, like, exceptional
yeah.
in order to be considered human.
Yeah.
And I'm reading and going, Axe, didn't we, like, have a growing up book for you?
I
like,
thought so.
Quite recently?
Did we not?
Did you learn nothing from your previous run-in with getting your ideas about your culture and your people, like, smashed to bits? Like, can you just not continue smashing them?
You'd think that once you take... It's like Jenga. Once you take out, like, the key, like, you, it's just all, you know, this should cascade pretty quickly.
This is one that, like, stuck with me in like, really stupid ways. Like, whenever I encounter a cuisine art, this is what I think about. I'm at Target, and I'm like, that Annalite's sweet, sweet kitchen setup.
Like, the Fenelon would love this mixer.
And, like, the idea that Axe watches a lot of TV. Just stuff like that. But, yeah, when I was rereading it, I liked it a lot. Oh, and yes, the Velvet Elvis.
That was confusing. I was like, that's not stylish at all.
Like, literally, where did he get this stuff? somebody, he gleaned that he was supposed to have art on his walls, and so he was like, oh, okay. There's some art.
Exactly. I'll get that. Yeah, I enjoyed it. And I think as well, just in the idea, like, we, you know, we keep reiterating that as we go further into the book series, there are more and more books that are less about, like, oh, Visser 3 is trying to kill us. What can we do? Because we're running out of new ideas for that. And again, it's hit or miss on what they're coming up with to sort of just...
Yeah, this is like an expansion pack book.
Yeah.
It's wholly in the world of Animorphs with the Urk conflict and alien characters that we are familiar with to some extent. But it just, you know, it expands what we know about the characters,
mm-hmm.
which I love.
Yeah, I also really appreciated it for that. So next time, what do we got? Next time we have The Familiar, which has Jake morphing a human. That can't be good. So join us, won't you, for the next installment of the Great Animorphs Reread, number 41, The Familiar. We hope you enjoyed our outing, no pun intended. With the gay Andalite book called The Other. We hope you enjoyed it. If you have any thoughts about, you know, how well or how not well you thought this did handling kind of a sensitive topic in its sci-fi packaging, which again, your mileage may vary, let us know. Feel free to write in. And we hope you have excellent days.
This is love. Love is true.